Repair Show, starring Jim Bevka. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Bevka's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to another edition of the Culture Repair Show. I am your host, Jim Bevka. Unlike last week, I am live and in person talking to you right now. Unless you're listening to this show on archive. I am the godfather of constitutional soul and the sultan of small government, and I am in a great mood. I am a sports fan, particularly a football fan. And I happen to reside in Northeast Ohio, where we're very much into LeBron James and the NBA. Well, my Ohio State Buckeyes beat their hated rivals that stayed up north. Woody Hayes wouldn't even say their name. The Michigan Wolverines went down to defeat in a very exciting game. And then last night I watched my Cleveland Cavaliers win, I think it was their seventh game in a row, against the Philadelphia 76ers, coming back from 9 points down at the beginning of the fourth quarter to win by 3 points. And then just now, my Cleveland Browns, my poor, poor, poor Cleveland Browns, pitched a shutout. 22-0, they defeated the Miami Dolphins. Nobody expected that. If you picked the Browns in the over-under, you probably just made yourself some good money. And that was exciting. I enjoyed watching that. And then, you know, I'm in a good mood, too, because this morning my children had a program in church, and so my wife's entire family was there. And we had our Thanksgiving this afternoon because a lot of us have to travel. We have family in Pennsylvania and stuff. Members of our family are from Pennsylvania, so they go back. And so not everybody can be here on Thanksgiving Day, but we were able to get together with them this afternoon. And so I've had a Thanksgiving dinner. In fact, I've had that substance, and I can't think of what the name of it is. And maybe, John, maybe you know what I'm talking about, where you eat turkey and you get really, really tired and you want to take a nap. So if all of a sudden you hear a thud on the microphone and I go out, that's probably why, because I had a lot of dark meat today. So I'm in a great mood, and whatever I talk about today is going to be interesting. Whatever I talk about is going to be informative. Whatever I say is going to be something you probably won't hear in too many other places, although Genesis Communications Network puts on some very good, unique programming and has hosts with some very similar ideas in some cases. Usually I give out my email on the show, and I'm kind of hesitant to do so, but I'll do it anyway. It's comments@downsizedc.org. If you want to email something into the show, comments@downsizedc.org. And I'm hesitant to do it because my computer's been having a lot of problems, and my Norton antivirus update came up. And I, you know, learned the hard way that, you know, you click through the buttons and think you're picking the right options, and then it turns out that you're not. I have firewall issues now with my Windows XP. And I just got to tell you, I'm growing increasingly distressed with how Windows XP has been working for me. You know, Windows in general. I mean, my system is very unstable, and I'm constantly having problems with it. And I'm just not sure, you know, how much longer I'm going to hold out. I've got a friend that's trying to get me to sign up to get started with a Unix operating system. I've already left Internet Explorer. I use Mozilla Firefox to do my internet browsing, and with the tabbed browsers, it's been really wonderful. But, you know, I put Norton in it, and I'm having just a devil of a time here. First of all, each year that I've renewed my Norton antivirus, the installation procedure has grown more cumbersome and more complicated, and this year was certainly no exception. I had to reboot my computer twice during the process. I had to go through 5 different processes to get it uploaded. I had to print out some pages about firewalls in the first place, and then apparently I didn't do it right. And I had paid them $45 for the privilege of screwing up my computer. I was my email connection was down for about 2 hours this week, and we figured out that it was a firewall issue. So right now I'm turning off my antivirus to download my email. Kind of seems self-defeating. So thank you for that, Norton. I appreciate it. I have a friend, hopefully, who will be coming to help me out with that this week, but I'm going to try to check my email during the show here. It's comments@downsizedc.org, or you can call 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. I want to talk, or our GOA update and the Patriot Act are both going to be kind of working hand in hand today. So I definitely know I'm going to get to a GOA update, and I'm going to talk about the Patriot Act. I also want to talk about a vote that took place. I don't fully understand what happened here, but apparently 403 members of Congress believe that we should stay in Iraq. Now, if you've heard all the rhetoric out of the Democrats of late, you wouldn't know that. You would think that they believe that George Bush made a big mistake and it's time to come home. We'll talk about those Democrats in just a few minutes, and so I'm looking forward to getting to that. And, of course, the Patriot Act, because there's some very interesting stuff happening on the Patriot Act. Now, last week I wasn't here. Ted Anderson, who is the owner of the Genesis Communications Network, GCNLive.com, which many of you are listening to the show on right now, was on my show. He also owns Midas Resources, which is a gold dealer, and we had a very good conversation about gold and why you should choose gold. And I was glad to have Ted on. Ted was on. We taped the show on Thursday, and then it aired during this time on Sunday, because I don't leave my post, folks. I know that each week you need to hear from me, and so here I am. And we had a very good conversation, but that meant that when Sunday came and I had some specific things to say on Sunday, I wasn't able to do it because I was out of town. I was giving a speech in Illinois, and it's interesting. Because I'm usually in church, which is where I think you should be on Sunday morning, I did not, or do not, watch the Sunday morning talking head shows. I usually don't know what happens. I hear or read about them on the blogs that I read and so forth, but I usually don't know what happened for myself. Well, Jay Rockefeller was on Fox News Sunday. Most of these interviews were very interesting to me, mainly because I don't usually watch the show. I probably would have been bored otherwise, but I haven't watched political talking head shows in a very long time. I don't have MSNBC or Fox News or CNN on my TV here in my house. We don't pay for the cable. I'm not interested in paying for it. I get my news from the internet, and I have a set of heuristics or rules of thumb that kind of help me know what's going on all the time anyway. I can interpret the news stories as they're coming in. We do take a Sunday paper, and most of the time I do read that. But I don't watch all these. So, seeing the Sunday morning talking head shows was kind of different. It was interesting that they were all kind of talking about the same thing. Well, Jay Rockefeller was on Fox News Sunday. And Fox News, of course, is the Republican network. They tend to take the more Republican position on issues. And they were really trying to pin the Democrats down on where they stand on Iraq. Now, Jay Rockefeller was caught in an interesting position. He's very critical of our being in Iraq and how the plan is being carried out in Iraq and openly suggesting that perhaps the troops need to be brought and withdrawn. But it was interesting. He was, before a clip was put on there on the show, before the United States attacked Iraq to try to remove Saddam Hussein, Jay Rockefeller said that Saddam was, first of all, an imminent, put that in quotes, imminent threat. And that also that he was developing, that he had in his possession, weapons of mass destruction, and then the intelligence was clear on this point. Well, the problem is that George W. Bush, who I have chronicled on this show before, who lied about a lot of things, never said there was an imminent threat for the use of weapons of mass destruction against the United States. Jay Rockefeller said something the president, trying to lie us into the war, wasn't even willing to say himself. But today, Rockefeller is blaming that on the intelligence that was handed to him. But as we're learning the intelligence that was handed to the president, as opposed to the summaries that were handed to the Senate, that what was handed to the president was actually more inflammatory, would have been even more likely to give Rockefeller that impression, and yet George W. Bush never said it. When we come back, we're going to talk about what I think about Jay Rockefeller's sticky situation and the Democrats on this war in general. 1-800-259-9231. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, No Legislation Without Representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizeDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizeDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
And we're back. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm your host, Jim Babka. This is the Culture Repair Show on the Genesis Communications Network. 1-800-259-9231, or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. I will, during the next break, disable my Norton antivirus, my brand new 2006 Norton antivirus, so I can check your email messages. Please don't send me anything bad. All right. We were talking before, when we went to the break, about Senator Jay Rockefeller, who was caught in a bit of a quandary because he supported the war and went even so far as to take the claims that George Bush was making and extend them previous to the attack on Iraq. But now he wants to pretend as if that never happened. You know, the Daily Show has taught the media how to do its job, and Chris Wallace trotted out video footage to show that Jay Rockefeller had, in fact, said something quite different when the political stakes were different. But now the Democrats, smelling blood in the water, have decided that they don't like this war very much anymore, and they're going to oppose it. Well, this week, the House Republicans decided to call their bluff. Now, I don't fully understand what happened here, and I'm not going to profess to fully understand what happened here. I did not have a chance before the weekend to talk to my sources on Capitol Hill. This vote took place right before they headed out of town. But by a vote of 403-3, with 6 present and 22 not voting, the House voted against an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. That's right, only 3 Democrats believe in an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. Only 3 Democrats voted for a withdrawal from Iraq when the bill had no chance for passage. Only 3 Democrats stood up courageously and said, "We must leave Iraq." This resolution isn't perfect, but it expresses the sense or direction that we have. The president has conducted this war so badly that we feel it's time to call an end to it, so we're going to take this resolution, which was non-binding, and give the sense of the House to the President of the United States, and only 3 Democrats would go on record saying they wanted an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. Folks, the thing that you must begin to understand, I've been very critical of George W. Bush on this show, very critical of the big spending, budget-busting Republicans who care not a lick about what their constituents think on various issues, including abortion, who feel that it is perfectly okay to go attack another nation without any provocation whatsoever, that you could start a preemptive war, that you can torture people and violate the Geneva Convention, that you can expand every single government program from education to housing and urban development, that you can set up programs, that you can buy off everybody's happiness, that you can rebuild New Orleans with government funds, that it is the government's job to do everything from the cradle to the grave, that they should have a prescription drug benefit, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. I have been critical of the Republicans. But the Democrats aren't any good either. And we've got to come to this to the realization that there is no fundamental difference in this party. Look, the Democrats are saying, well, this resolution was worded differently. This resolution does not say, we have said that we think that a withdrawal plan should be put out by the president, that there should be maybe there should be a phased-out withdrawal that takes place over a period of time. This bill said immediate withdrawal, and that's not what we're for. But this bill was A, non-binding, It was a resolution, non-binding, on the president. It was a sense of the House of Representatives. And B, it had Ice Cube's chance in heck. You thought I was going to say something else, didn't you? It didn't have an Ice Cube's chance in that place that's very warm of passing. And only three Democrats managed to muster the courage of their convictions to stand up and say, no, we oppose this war. They were McKinney, Serrano, and Wexler. Now, there were some that said present, meaning that they wanted to hold out on their position, but that's only a half dozen people. I mean, even if we're looking at this generously, there's only nine members of the House of Representatives that feel that the war's so bad that even an imperfect resolution expressing that sense can't have their vote. Or maybe it's that they don't have the courage. They'll criticize the president, but they won't act. The Democrats are no better than the Republicans, ladies and gentlemen. But this brings up a second thing. And this, you know, Senator Rockefeller was in the box, so to speak, on what he had said. He had put himself in a box. Clearly he believed the intelligence. Clearly he supported the intelligence. And he was willing to say what the intelligence didn't even say to help advance the cause of the war. But now that there's a political opportunity, he sees things differently. Senator Rockefeller should have been on the record, as should every senator, as should every representative. They shouldn't be able to do what John Kerry did last fall. They shouldn't be able to say that they voted for something before they voted against it. They shouldn't be able to say that they gave the president the authorization of the use of force, but they didn't expect him to use it. First of all, it's not their right to give it away. That right belongs to you, the citizen. You delegated it to the Congress. They didn't have the right to delegate their right. Congress is the one that determines whether or not we go to war. It should have been Congress. It's called a declaration of war. And we haven't had one since December of 1941. We've been in Korea. We've been in Vietnam. We've been in Somalia. We've been in Bosnia. We've been in Iraq. We've been in Iraq again. We've had, quote-unquote, police actions from Grenada to who knows where, all Haiti, all over the globe, but we have not had a single declaration of war. What happened in Iraq was indeed a war, and it should not have been delegated to the President of the United States to determine when those troops should come. Due diligence in our system means that all that power should not be resident in one person, in one office. It was supposed to be within the people. And the people should have spoken whether or not they wanted our government to attack the government of Iraq to topple the leader Saddam Hussein. And a declaration of war would have committed them to it. It would have committed them to a specific task, a specific timetable, specific sets of objectives. It is in the interest of the men and women who serve in the military to have that backing, to know that they have the support of their government, and to know that their government has a plan. And if that kind of due diligence had been done, maybe all of the intelligence lies that were shoved down our throat by people like President Bush and Senator Jay Rockefeller would not have been pushed down our throat. So for this constitutional violation, we are getting our just desserts. Jay Rockefeller, he deserved all the squirming he had to do in his chair on Fox News Sunday. Chris Wallace put him on the spot. He had it coming. When we come back from the break, I'm going to do a GOA update, and we're going to talk about the Patriot Act. But let's get warmed up with Wayne LaPierre of the National Rifle Association. Well, you know what? We'll do that after we come back from the break. We'll do Wayne LaPierre, and we'll do the Patriot Act and the GOA update. We're going to talk about the Patriot Act and our Gun Owners of America update because this show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America. And if you want to get in on the conversation, 1-800-259-9231 or email me, I'm going to check right now, comments@downsizedc.org.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org, or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS. You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Segment of the Cultural Repair Show. I'm your host, Jim Babka. 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. And I just checked my email, and we've got a message from Dan, and I will try to get to that here in the next break because the message is a little bit lengthy. I've already started making some notes, Dan, on what I want to say. His question had to do with the Medicare prescription drug situation, really bad deal for seniors, and I want to address your question, Dan. And if I have time, I have some thoughts that, once again, on the evolution, intelligent design / creation debate. And I come at this from the position of a born again Christian, believe that Jesus died and rose again. I attend church every Sunday. I'm a Sunday school teacher. It's an important part of my life. But I believe that the best explanation for our natural history is provided by evolution. And I have some thoughts to share with you based on some comments from a friend about intelligent design, and I want to address those if we have time before the show ends today. But right now, I want to warm up for our GOA update by sharing something from Wayne LaPierre called Remember New Orleans. If you've ever seen Wayne LaPierre of the National Rifle Association speak, you know that he is a bit of a firebrand, and so you'll enjoy this, I hope. Picture your beloved hometown, the neighborhood where you live. Hold that image in your head. Now imagine that a massive natural disaster has transformed your beloved neighborhood into a putrid soup of splinters, muck, and corpses. A massive natural disaster has pounded and ground your town into an ugly gravy of dead, toxic garbage. There's no power to run a single thing that makes a sound. There's no water to bring in hydration or carry away waste. All life is stagnant around you and dying. You can't call anyone. No one can call you. Phone lines and cell towers are down. 9/11 is gone. Police, fire, ambulance, the safety net of normal life is completely gone. Think about what you would feel like. There's no one but you. The shadow of armed looters and thugs begins combing the street with hard eyes and hungry looks. They take what they want. They rape who they want. They kill at will. Every exit is impassable, so leaving is impossible, but staying is unimaginable. Life has been reduced to merely breathing, devoid of the barest essentials. Your throat throbs for water. Your gut aches for food. And both hungers are eclipsed by an inevitable fight for survival against those who would take your home, your wife, and your life. It's a hellish nightmare of hopelessness, helpless terror bigger than your brain can almost imagine. You hear nothing but the buzz of mosquitoes, occasional shouts for help, and gunshots, and looting in the dark. But you have a firearm. At dawn, a few neighbors emerge from their houses. Some of them also have guns, and you get together with them and you agree to take a stand, just as good people have done since civilization was formed. Until civilization returns, you band together to protect those who can't protect themselves. You realize suddenly that you're part of the militia in the truest historic sense of the word. You've got a lot of single mothers with kids on the street. Everyone's doors and windows are wide open. They've been destroyed. So you tell the single mothers, if you have trouble, just scream. We'll hear you. We'll be there. You spray paint sheets of ply with big red letters. We are home. We have guns. We will shoot. And you know, because even the New York Times carried a picture of it, that's exactly what they did in neighborhood after neighborhood all over the Gulf states. Not in some foreign country, here in the USA. Roving gangs see your sign, they see your guns, and what do? They stay away. Those guns and nothing else during that time gave the hopeless hope. In the midst of all that misery, you're struck at that moment by the beauty and the salvation of a Second Amendment freedom in the United States of America. The armed authorities finally arrive. They blame a broken levee for your predicament. But then, something you couldn't imagine happening happens. They destroy the one thing that was standing there between you and chaos, the Second Amendment. They start confiscating firearms from the law-abiding. SWAT-style teams start swarming block by block as if on a war footing. They're tense, they're jumpy, and they're trained for urban warfare. Keep in mind, these military folks, these police folks, they were on your side. They didn't want to carry out this order that was given by the police chief of New Orleans. In fact, they were outraged over what they'd been ordered to do. A reporter asked one of them, you might have to shoot an American? And the soldier said, yes. But the American he was talking about shooting, they weren't criminals. They were brave people who were simply left behind when the hurricane hit in one of the most corrupt cities in the United States of America. New Orleans was the first city in American history to disarm peaceable American citizens door to door at gunpoint. And I'll tell you this, as we sit here today, it must be the last. He goes on and asks people to pick up the slogan, Remember New Orleans. Well, this show is graciously sponsored by Gun Owners of America, and unlike the NRA, they don't compromise. I'm very grateful for Larry Pratt and Gun Owners of America. You can visit them at gunowners.org. Larry Pratt and his gang have been following this issue. They've been calling for action. You can take action on this issue at their website. But I have a different update here today from Gun Owners of America to share with you. It has to do with the Patriot Act. And let me tell you what's going on with the Patriot Act, H.R. 3199. That's the House number for the bill. There are six senators who said they may be willing to filibuster this legislation, and one of them has committed to doing it through the Thanksgiving recess, which has now happened. They're in recess. Folks, the Patriot Act is on the ropes. The Republicans, once again, smelling blood in the water, have decided to stall it. They've decided to keep the president from getting what he wanted. Now, we took a position on this at downsizedc.org this week. That's where I'll direct you to go to send a message to your senators and your representative, downsizedc.org, to let them know how you feel. But here's what Larry Pratt had to say. It will expand the ability of the FBI to compile a registration list of gun purchase records. The Senate is now planning to vote on this Patriot Act reauthorization bill as soon as Saturday, as Majority Leader Bill Frist is trying to ram the bill through the Senate before it recesses before Thanksgiving. Now, Frist failed, by the way. Under current law, Section 215 of the Patriot Act allows the FBI to get secret court orders to seize any business records it believes would be relevant to an anti-terrorism investigation without having to make the case that the records they're confiscating have any connection to a suspected terrorist. All along, the concern has been that business records can be interpreted to mean gun records. The FBI has been making this assertion already, even though the federal law doesn't specifically state that they have the authority to do so. In fact, the McClure-Volcker law states that feds cannot retain firearm records at all. Well, H.R. 3199 would change all that. The bill clearly states that firearm sales records are now fair game for the FBI, in essence, overturning the prohibition on gun registration. So it must be stopped. The Patriot Act must be stopped. And by the way, they're looking to enhance certain powers with this new Patriot Act that they would have been able to get in, say, in a Patriot II. And they're retaining, so there are some things that are going to sunset that are being retained, almost all of which are being retained by this version of the bill. But if nothing happens on this bill, if it dies, the sunsets will not be renewed and the new provisions will not be added. Gridlock is what is needed here. The Patriot Act can be stopped by not getting voted through. Now, I got to tell you, as we go to a break, I don't hold out a lot of hope that the Democrats are going to hold the line on this. That's why it's important that you take action. Go to downsizedc.org. Go to the Stop the Patriot Act campaign and let your voice be heard. If enough Americans say stop, the Democrats may have the resolve to hold out, and this bill may expire and die the way it should. I'll be back.
Imagine, you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, "Your Honor, I didn't know about this law." How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizeDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizeDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
You are listening to the Culture Repair Show, and I'm your host, Jim Babka. I'll give out the number once again. It's 1-800-259-9231. But nobody seems to be taking it up today because I seem to be doing such a good job. I understand you don't want to interrupt because there are so many things that are being said on this show that are interesting and so unique. And so I'm glad to be able to be here and share this with you. And I don't mind that the phone isn't lit up right now because we do have an email question that came in. And I will address this question right now. And so I understand, you know, you just want to sit tight and listen and learn, and I think that's wonderful. I'm glad for that. And I will keep teaching you as long as you want to listen. Well, we've heard from Dan in California who says, I am retired and my wife has to take all kinds of medicines for a heart problem. We belong to Kaiser Permanente, a California HMO, and under the new, and he's referring to the prescription drug law, that the Republicans passed in 2003, almost 2 years ago exactly right now. It was right before Thanksgiving that they passed that. Our drug costs will go up 33.33% in the first phase. And instead of saving us money, it will cost us more. When we get over $2,250, which is a given in our case, we will be at the mercy of the big gouging drug companies. She must take these medicines, so we will have to cut something in our tight budget, which, by the way, is impossible. As the attached article states, it's a political trick on the part of our out-of-touch Republican-controlled Congress and the Bush administration. Well, the attached article he shared with me is called The Deadly Donut by Paul Krugman, and I have to tell you right off the bat, by way of disclosure, I do not think very highly of Mr. Krugman. Mr. Krugman believes that government is wonderful, that it can solve all problems. It is the first resort for Mr. Krugman for everything, but I'll get to my analysis in a second. Let me quote specifically from Krugman here, who writes, he clarifies exactly what's wrong with the program here that and how it's going to affect people like Dan from California. But if your cumulative drug expenses reach $2,250, a very strange thing will happen. You'll suddenly be on your own. The Medicare benefit won't kick in again unless you reach $5,100. The gap in coverage has come to be known as the donut hole. One way to see the bizarre effect of this hole is to notice that if you are a retiree and spend $2,000 on drugs next year, Medicare will cover 66% of your expenses. But if you spend $5,000, which means that you're much more likely to need help paying those expenses, Medicare will only cover 30% of your bills. A study in the July-August issue of Health Affairs points out that this will place many retirees on a financial roller coaster. People with high drug costs will have relatively low out-of-pocket expenses for part of the year, say until next summer. Then suddenly they'll enter the donut hole and their personal expenses will soar. And because the same people tend to have high drug costs year after year, the roller coaster ride will repeat in 2007. How will people respond when their out-of-pocket costs surge? Well, the Health Affairs article argues, based on experience with HMO plans, with caps on drug benefits, that it's likely, quote, some beneficiaries will cut back even essential medications while in the donut hole, end quote. In other words, this donut will make some people sick, and for some, it will be deadly. The smart thing to do for those who could afford it would be to buy supplemental insurance that would cover the donor hole. But guess what? The bill that established the drug benefit specifically prohibits you from buying insurance to cover the gap. That's why many retirees who already have prescription drug insurance are being advised not to sign up for the Medicare benefit. Well, Dan, if you recall, this bill barely passed. And as I said, it was about 2 years ago exactly. That vote was kept open over 3 hours in the middle of the night when representatives were supposed to be headed home for Thanksgiving break. Lots of arms were twisted and favors extended. There was even an allegation of a bribe slash threat against one Republican who was opposed to the bill. And the President of the United States even stayed up past his bedtime to call freshman legislators. Two of them finally capitulated and the bill went on to pass. Now, who benefits? Well, the prescription drug industry does, of course. You're right about that, Dan. But before you get too mad at them, keep in mind that it takes between 7 and 14 years to get a new drug to market. It costs up to $1 billion to get it approved by the FDA. The very same drugs are available in other countries sooner and cheaper. That's what the government does for you. Now, if government is buying the drugs, the cost of those individual prescriptions are going to go up. Why? Because there's no longer any correlation between supply and demand. There's just darn near infinite demand. And as if that's not bad enough, there's the burden of unfunded liabilities. That includes everything from public debt to Medicare and Social Security benefits. In 2000, those liabilities totaled $20.4 trillion. By 2004, that number was up to $43.3 trillion, and when the updated numbers come out in about a month from now, they are expected to top $46 trillion and maybe even reach $50 trillion. Now, how much is $50 trillion? That's $166,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. So your kids and your grandkids are strapped with that burden, and sooner or later it's going to need to be turned into spendable cash. When that day of reckoning comes, and it has already begun, they can either raise your offspring's taxes into the stratosphere, or they can turn on the printing machines like we talked about on last week's show and make more of that funny money, taxing your progeny in the cruelest way of all, inflation. There shouldn't have been a Medicare prescription drug plan. It didn't help you, as you can see. It shouldn't take the time and money it takes to get your medication approved. That doesn't help any of us. And the government shouldn't be taking on the debt it's taking. That destroys our future. I'll be back. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it, I didn't approve it, I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Doesn't do anybody any favors when they pass these large programs. They only manage to hurt. Before I get back to this article and wrap up with this, I just want to say I probably won't get to my discussion on... In fact, I won't. We're not going to do the discussion on evolution intelligent design today. There's some new observations I want to offer. I've talked about this on my blog, jimbabka.com, which is now basically, it's still there, it's still archived, but it's not no longer up to date. But I've talked about this issue on the blog, and I've talked about it on the radio show, and I have some new insights and additional information I want to get into. So maybe I will do that next week on the show. We'll see how things go on that. Let me finish up on this Paul Krugman article, because there's one more thing in here that kind of jumps out at me. I told you that I was not a big fan of Mr. Krugman, and here's why. In this article that was sent to me, the following sentence leaps out. Politicians who don't believe in a positive role for government shouldn't be allowed to design new government programs. Now, this is a lesson he believes people have to learn. Let me repeat that. Politicians who don't believe in a positive role for government shouldn't be allowed to design new government programs. Well, as I told you before, Krugman believes in government is entirely positive. There are no negative roles for government in his mind. The problem isn't trusting people who don't like government to design government programs. Republicans love government so much they're borrowing us into bankruptcy. No, the problem is big government. And Downsize DC, the organization I run, the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org, that's my day job, running those two organizations, will always take the position that more government is bad for everyday Americans, like Dan from California, even when it's supposedly trying to do you a favor. Harry Brown, my friend Harry Brown, puts it this way. He says, government is only good at one thing. It breaks both your legs, hands you a pair of crutches, and then says, see, without us, you wouldn't be able to walk. And that's exactly what this Medicare prescription drug benefit did. It broke your leg and handed you a pair of crutches. And the politicians celebrated and patted themselves on the back. George Bush was proud that he delivered. Other presidents couldn't, but he delivered a prescription drug bill. Well, as you can see, regular people like Dan from California are hurt by big government help. That's the lesson we have to learn. This week, say something about the Patriot Act. Now, at DownsizeDC.org, I'll wrap up the show with this. We are going to make a very big announcement tomorrow. It is the beginning of a series of big announcements that we will make on up into the very beginning of the new year, because 2006 is going to be the breakthrough year for DownsizeDC.org. We have a brand new program that will be coming at the Downsize DC Foundation that we will be announcing in the very near future. And we will be making a significant announcement about this radio show. That's right, this show, and it's just coming up in a couple of weeks. So you're going to want to stay tuned. Well, this has been the Culture Repair Show, and I have been and still am your host, Jim Babka. And so I encourage you to come back next week to get more of this kind of commentary, where you hear the truth, not the Republican spin, not the Democratic spin, not even Bill O'Reilly's spin, but the truth about the facts. Big government hurts, but downsizing DC leads to human progress. I hope you'll come back next week. Thank you.